Cochrane for all. Better evidence for better health decisions.
Right, hello everyone. This is Andre and welcome back to the Cochrane for All podcast. I'm here with two Cochrane systematic reviewers. Well, it's great to get a couple of reviewers on the podcast, so thanks a lot for joining us. It's Marita and Teresa. Do you want to introduce yourselves, please?
Thank you. Thank you for letting us come here today. My name is Teresa Kristina Dalsbø. I work at the Norwegian Institute of Public Health with my colleague. Here is
Marita Fønhus, and I also work at the Norwegian Institute of Public Health and EPAC and Cochrane Norway.
And you've just published a new systematic review on patient-mediated interventions to improve professional practice. So this is very much a review that plays to the theme of this conference that we're at here. And for me, it's a review that kind of makes intuitive sense. So I have a few health conditions myself, and I've been along to the doctor, and I've worked in evidence-based healthcare for 20 years. So when I go to my doctor and ask about things, I tend to go along with a meta-analysis or two. And when I present that evidence to my doctor, I often get a very, whoa, what's this kind of response? And they suddenly wake up and become much more attentive. So it makes sense to me that if you go along with information or evidence or some kind of piece of evidence that actually demonstrates you are an engaged patient and you know what you're talking about, that that would have an impact on clinical practice, clinical behaviour. And patient-mediated interventions, that is not necessarily a phrase that everyone will understand. Tell us what that covers, what kind of interventions you are looking at here.
We have used a definition that is any intervention aimed at changing the performance of healthcare professionals through interaction with patients or information provided by or to patients.
Okay.
So it's very wide.
So it's things like giving information to patients so that when they go to meet with their clinician, they have a different experience than they would if they just turned up. Or educating them in such a way that they can engage in shared decision making, or I guess getting involved in the actual organisation that they're working within.
Yes, yes, and being part of a committee or board at the hospital. Or they can actually educate, as you say, personal staff or GPs how to make clinical examinations, how to approach patients, etc. And you also have this one category that we have named information from patients about own health concerns or needs, which is one category where, for instance, before a clinical encounter, you're sitting in the waiting room and you're filling out a form about your own health, where they may assess risk factors or see if you are above a threshold for mental conditions. So, yeah.
So it sounds like a really tricky review to do because you've got such a wide potential pool of review of research to draw on, and there's lots of potential false positives that you need to exclude. What did you find? How many studies did you find, and what were they at?
We should say that it's updated by March 2018, so it's quite a recent search. And up to then, we found and included 25 randomized controlled trials. Quite a few of them were cluster randomized. And
And within those 25 studies, six were the one we categorized as patients giving information about themselves. And we had 13 in a category of patient information, like patients receiving reminders or simple one-sheet information about best treatments. And then we had five that fell into the category of patient education, and then we have one on decision aids. But there were some difficulties when trying to categorize information and education, because there is not a clean-cut line between those two. So they were based on our interpretation of the different definitions and the way it was described in the studies.
Okay. Yeah. And what were the findings? Where's the strongest evidence here?
Well, the strongest evidence is for the interventions where patients give information about their own health concern or needs, which we have moderate certainty in the findings. And we also have moderate certainty about patient education interventions. Very positive, and also patient information. But the results or the findings were low quality or low certainty.
So just to kind of paraphrase that in layman's terms, if you're talking about educating patients, so we're saying that there are there's some certainty in the evidence that by educating patients that will improve clinical practice.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, yeah, that's a really kind of intuitive thing.
Yeah. Mm. And moderate is quite good,
yeah,
actually.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's only it's not high, but it's moderate. So I would say it's very solid.
Mm. Okay. And in terms of the patient information being given to clinicians, can you give us an example of the sort of thing that people would, what kind of information is being captured and how is that used by the clinician?
Well, for instance, if there's focus on mental health and you want to detect and to manage and treat or maybe refer cases where it's needed, then you have this, for instance, a questionnaire in the waiting area where patients can fill out while they wait for the clinical consultation. And then this meeting can then be also set by what's captured in this questionnaire. Maybe that person wasn't there to talk about their mental health, but it really is the issue for that person. So this might set the clinical agenda differently than it would without this kind of information getting retrieved from the patient.
Right, okay, that's really interesting. So you're talking there about having kind of diagnostic checklists for things like depression and anxiety, just as a general, that you give to everyone who's in a cluster trial.
Mm.
And that information is given on to the general practitioner. Mm.
Or you can have a form filled out by a care, for instance, a parent with a child with asthma. You can also have different types of risk assessments if you're at risk for developing diabetes or other chronic conditions. That this will fall in with this category.
So what's your sense? Is it the fact that the clinician is thinking about that thing? So for depression, for example, that doesn't get picked up a lot of the time in primary care settings because people present with all sorts of other, you know, physical complaints or tiredness or whatever. Is your sense that it's the act of giving to the general practitioner a piece of information that says, look, talk about depression, or do you think it's actually the content of the information that's making the difference?
I think the point here is more the awareness of more than just asking for depression, but more like asking how the person, what's going on in the life of the person, rather than are you depressed, so to speak. So that if you have multiple questions that can tap into, for example, mood, that would be something that the patient and the physician can talk about together in their meeting afterwards.
Yeah, and I guess as primary care in this country, I'm sure it's the same in Norway, is extremely pressurized, and patients maybe have, you know, three or four minutes with their GP, and if you go in asking for antibiotics because you've got flu, then you're not necessarily going to speak about mental well-being as part of that. So yeah, it's putting it on the agenda. Interesting. So what's the kind of takeaway message, do you think, from this review in terms of practice, in terms of other research?
Well, the main finding is that patients can contribute to increase how the doctors adhere to guidelines. That's the main take-home message, I would say. And I think that, well, you mentioned that we found evidence for some interventions, but there are also some interventions we didn't find data on.
And also, yeah, example of those can where patients are part of a committee or a board in a hospital or even at a higher level, and where patients are a part of the education of healthcare professional. But also another thing that was quite challenging in this process was this terminology and the definitions used in this field, because there's so many disciplines and professionals that work within this field. So it made it kind of hard to make a systematic approach. Mm-hmm. And also... also the comparisons and what's usual care and standard care. We would love if we in future studies can really describe in details both the intervention but also the comparison, so we know what we're really pulling together. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm really interested in the point about there not being any randomized evidence that getting patients involved at board level in a health organisation is a good thing, because that's something that happens right across the board. We're doing that already, and it kind of plays to Jennifer Johansson's keynote, I think, later on in the conference, where she's talking about patient engagement and are we doing it because we know that it actually works, or are we just doing it because we feel that we should be involving people and co-producing? Mm-hmm. What's your sense, what's your feeling about that? If we don't have any randomised evidence, would it be randomised evidence that we would be looking for, do you think? Or is other sorts of research more appropriate?
It might be that the focus has been on process outcomes and on patient health outcomes, but not necessarily regarding those that are actually doing the job, which are the healthcare professionals. So this is just a shift in focus, I guess, and that we should maybe think more about in the future. So I guess there are probably lots of studies that shows that this is sensible and it's good effect to have patient involvement in all of these kinds of areas, but they just haven't looked at this specific focus on professional practice. I guess.
Mm-hmm. And we should also say that we only searched for randomized controlled trials. So there could be, for example, very high quality interrupted time series that say something about involving patients in boards. Also, we didn't search for studies on, for example, types of interventions delivered to health students. I mean, such as doctors training to be a student training to be a doctor, or someone training to be a nurse. That could also be several interventions where we don't have, where we didn't tap into it.
Yeah.
Well, I guess there's lots of qualitative evidence as well about you know, working together and co-producing. And maybe that's often the kind of thing that you would look for to answer some of those questions.
And another thing, we had a lot of outcomes that we thought were interesting to find an answer for, and of course, besides patient health outcomes, we also wanted to see if there were any effects on that we should be concerned about. Dealing with interactions between the patient and the doctor, how satisfied they were, the acceptance, and so on. We didn't find anything about those important outcomes, which kind of is this communication and trust relationship and how this works. So we don't know enough yet. So we're really hoping that a lot of new studies look into this.
Yeah.
And it would also be interesting to see some qualitative reviews on this as to how the patients, for example, feel about having a form to fill in before the consultation, and also if the doctors find it worthwhile Do they like it? Do they use it? Do they find it more complicating? That would also be interesting questions.
And more about, you know, the health economics here, and also equity, and there's a lot of issues here that haven't been covered because we didn't find anything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's really interesting work. Thanks a lot for joining me and talking about it, and yeah, hope you enjoy the rest of the conference.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Cochrane for All. Better evidence for everyone. Follow the hashtag Cochrane for All to get the science and evidence to empower better decisions.